Beautiful song, Josh. I don't know if this will help you, Josh. When I was first hired as a pastor here, as a baby pastor, the year was 2000, and I was the pastor for children and families, and they had us come up on the stage, the platform, and we were supposed to say something inspiring and pastoral in 10 seconds. And I had no notice, it's just say something, you know, and I said, well, I'm so glad to be here, and you know, I'm just remembering that great text from the Bible. All your children will be taught of the Lord, and great will be the peace of your children. From 2 Samuel something something. Text is in Isaiah 54. Only one person knew. Only one person pulled me aside and said, I think we might need to interview you again. That text is in Isaiah. So welcome to the human family at La Sierra. It's all good, Josh. Here's a story I'm going to tell you this afternoon. Tell me what you think of this story. It won't take you too long. I want to tell you about an afternoon this week where I'm sitting on the grass up on campus, the university campus. The sun was up, but not too high up. It was confident, but beautiful, right? A La Sierra breeze already coming through. The grass had been freshly cut. You know how great it smells when you didn't have to mow it? Sitting by the fountain there next to the sculpture, and if you close your eyes and imagine, just concentrate, that water sounds like it could be the Pacific Ocean, and you're at Laguna Beach. I'm sitting there with my picnic lunch, and I can hear people laughing off on this side. There's a ukulele playing. Some guy is serenading some girl. I can hear it. Da, 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 da. Oh, it's so happy on this side. Over on this side, I can see a cluster of people talking, intense dialogue. There's debate going on, and it matters, and their conduct is very respectful and engaged, and it's beautiful to watch people actually have a conversation and be in a conversation, right? That was over on this side, and pretty soon, the longer I sat, I could smell supper cooking from the calf, right? Fried something. You know, fried food all smells good. I could go on. Absolutely nothing goes wrong in this story. It's a perfect day on the grass, up on the lawn, around the university, next to the cafeteria and the fountain. Nothing goes wrong in this story. I could keep going. You want to hear more? Okay, thanks for playing along. Was that Peter or Norm? Something? Okay, so the butterflies are doing their thing, and the squirrels, we do have squirrels up on that lawn. My lunch, did I tell you what was inside the picnic? Goat cheese with these fig and thyme crackers, and some nectarines and plums and cherry tomatoes, and Taliente caramel sea salt ice cream, shortbread cookies. Perfect. This story is all goodness and light. Nothing goes wrong. There's no tension. There's no problem to solve. There won't be a bully. There won't be a crisis. There won't be a moral dilemma. There won't be a choice to make. There won't be a transformational moment. The story is all goodness and light. And some English professors and some writers tell us these are the stories that bore us to death. You want to watch that movie? Do you want to read that book when nothing goes wrong? Yeah, the answer is usually no. Psalm 145, we're going to read portions of today. The critique is that this psalm suffers from the same crisis. It's all goodness and light. Nothing goes wrong in this psalm. Listen to a few verses of Psalm 145, which is simply entitled Praise. That's the whole name of the psalm, the only psalm in the Psalter with the title Praise. Straight up praise, pure praise, nothing added or subtracted, praise. Psalm 145 reads a little like this: I will exalt you, my God, the King. I will praise your name forever and ever. Every day I will praise you and extol your name forever and ever. Great is the Lord, most worthy of praise. His greatness no one can fathom. One generation commands your works to another. They tell of your mighty acts. They speak of the glorious splendor of your majesty, and I will meditate on your wonderful works. That we're only on verse 5. This will go on for 21 verses. The French philosopher Simone Weil says, this psalm is boring because it doesn't resonate or sound like our lives. Where is the disruption? Where is the problem? And who wants a boring psalm? She's not the only one that says this about Psalm 145. We're reading this psalm for the next 4 weeks, friends, for a very particular reason. The only psalm called praise in the Psalter. The psalm included more frequently in Jewish prayer books than any other psalm. The psalm recited more frequently. Some sources tell us that Jewish homes would recite this psalm 3 times a day in their homes. You think you got problems with the prayer over your food? 21 verses 3 times a day. That's Psalm 145. Testimony about God. It's a testimony to God. It starts with a personal voice that moves to a public voice, from personal to communal. It is all good. One author says, it's goodness that is powerful, and it's powerful in its goodness. Psalm 145. Beautifully written, and since about 2 of us in this room read Hebrew, we're not going to talk about that part of it this morning, this afternoon. That one is an acrostic, one letter of the Hebrew alphabet for every verse in this psalm. So imagine A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H, I, all the way down your paper, the Hebrew alphabet all the way down your paper, and each verse of the psalm gets one letter. And then we move on to the next letter in the alphabet, and we get another verse, and the third letter in the alphabet, and another verse. Beautifully crafted, skillfully poetic. Libraries are full of books on the literary value of Psalm 145. And this is not what we're going to talk about. I have a different question this morning. What if Psalm 45 is boring? What if we're really just not so great at this praise, straight up praise without all the problems? I will praise you, God. We have praise teams and praise songs and praise bands, and we offered some praise this morning in this segment called Exhale. But friends, that's nothing like 21 verses of praise 3 times a day. What if the critiques are right and that the psalm is just a little bit boring and it doesn't have a whole lot of traction? It doesn't track well with where we live. We don't voice our praise this way in 2016. It's an interesting question to ask when you consider the news coming at us 24/7, right? 24/7, the news that comes at us, if it bleeds, it leads, right? That's sort of the motto for a lot of years now with the news that we consume. If you're watching a 25-minute news, I don't care if you're on cable news or what you're taking in, any of it. 25-minute show, you'll get 24 minutes of bleak darkness, and then you'll get one little sweet special human interest story, right? The kitties and the bunnies and the ducks live in the doghouse, isn't it so cute? And the bear, we pulled it out of the people's pool in Glendora. And you know, one little minute of those stories at the end. 24 minutes of chaos and gloom and doom. Maybe this is our challenge, that we're sort of used to the darkness now. So that total straight up praise is difficult for us. It's a difficult rhythm for us to appreciate. Is that the problem? The line that I picked up from the news this week, the day that I turned it off, about Wednesday afternoon, the line that summarized everything that had been happening was this line. A person said on cable network, on cable news, we are now trafficking in the toxic. All of us trafficking in the toxic. Candidates and anchors and pundits and reporters and consumers who drink this up, I'm one of them, and we want more. We're trafficking in the toxic, according to the news this week. So it's an interesting question. Is that why the Psalms are difficult? A straight up psalm of praise doesn't have so much traction. There's no bad news in it. So I'm listening, like you are listening, to the public discourse in our world that is so dark, where we traffic in toxicity. And this week, I took notice of a story I heard. I'm listening to NPR, And they begin dialogue with one particular individual and a story that they aired that was aired this week. Actually, a collection of stories. I just want to show you a portion of this story focused on a group of high school students in the lower part of the state of Michigan. These students live in Baldwin, and they go to Baldwin High School, some of the poorest students in all of Michigan. Listen to what's going on there. Just a couple minutes.
Baldwin has a long history of generational poverty, and it's rural poverty. Many of the students who did not proceed with some type of post-secondary education would end up on some type of public assistance.
It's also one of the poorest counties in Michigan. There's no manufacturing, so there are not a lot of job opportunities. When I first moved up here 12 years ago, very few of our students went on to college. College wasn't something that was in their thinking at all. Many of them did not even graduate from high school.
One of the things that was in the news was an event that happened in Kalamazoo.
This is how the crowd reacted 10 years ago when the Kalamazoo Promise was announced, a program that pays for college tuition for Kalamazoo public school grads.
If Kalamazoo could find an angel to subsidize a promise, why couldn't we do that in Baldwin? We began to knock on the doors of the big corporations and foundations. When we started to send out all the proposals and set up meetings with the people, the market crashed. We received the rejection letters and we were devastated. But we decided we'd put so much effort and so much time. We went after all the graduates, parents, graduating classes, anybody that would listen, everybody gave. We had some grandparents who said, I can only give $20 a month, is that okay? Oh my gosh, and we said that was more than we could expect.
There was a little ribs place just to the south of Baldwin that put up a jar. And you know, they said, we'll match everything that gets put in the jar. We didn't anticipate the sort of grassroots support that we got. These are not people who had a lot of means, but these were people who had a vision.
I'm so happy to be part of it.
I'm gonna cry tomorrow.
Students who attend Baldwin High School and graduate from Baldwin High School are eligible to receive up to $5,000 a year for 4 years for tuition and fees at any higher education institution in the state of Michigan. Before the promise began, about a third of the students went on to higher education. And this year, 90% are on track to attend a higher education institution.
My name is Michaela George. I applied to 13 colleges and universities. I've been accepted to all 13 colleges and universities.
Hear that? Applied to 13, been accepted to all 13. 90% of these high school students in Baldwin this fall, they expect, will be in college. This is an interesting community, one of the last stops on the Underground Railroad going north. Diverse community, primarily white and black, but the name Jim Crow, means something to them. Nat King Cole chose this town for his vacationing. They're diverse and they're beautiful in the way they've come together in harmony, this community, Baldwin, where about 90% of these children also qualified for student lunch programs and breakfast. Now 90% of them are going to college every year because a few people in the community decided they wanted their kids to go to school. So I'm listening to this story on the radio, middle of the week. The reporter from NPR says to this gentleman, his name is Howard Schultz. He happens to run Starbucks. He says to Starbucks CEO, so you are now telling inspirational stories for a living. Is this so you can sell more coffee? And the CEO of Starbucks says, no, this had nothing to do with coffee. Let me read you his words. He says, there's not a problem we're trying to solve. It's just that America is dark. These are dark days. People advancing initiatives in their community and people loving thy neighbor. Who says thy? Except for people who read the Bible. People loving thy neighbor, he said. These are stories that the country needs. There's no gimmick here. The NPR reporter says, "You want to sell more coffee, tell the truth." He said, "This is not about coffee, actually. Our responsibility has changed. Rules of engagement have changed in the national discourse. We have a responsibility," Schultz said, "to elevate the discourse." So they recruited someone from the Washington Post to help them create these beautiful stories, to video them, to find the music and make gorgeous products out of them. They last about 6 minutes. And they do this now because they say, quote, "In the United States, there is a market that longs for heartwarming." Check them out this afternoon. They call these videos upstanders, because in our world, we have a choice to either be bystanders or upstanders. Interesting to me that I now turn to Starbucks to find the good stories in the world. And my attention is piqued, especially after a couple of weeks ago when Pastor Austin was here and Caitlin Rice from our academy was here sharing about how her learning disability and what she struggled with when she said to us, "Words matter. The words we fill the air up with, these words matter. The stories we tell matter. The good stories we tell matter. Reaching for the better stories and the better words matter." And it occurs to me as I listen to Starbucks this week taking their stand that they're actually doing what it is faith communities are called to do, right? Faith communities, we have this role in culture. We have this role in the world to find the better words, to find the better story, to reach for praise. It is praise, actually, that shapes our space. So our praise matters. We might not do it very well. It might make us uncomfortable, but I want to say that again. The place that we're making here, the home that we're creating for each other in faith communities, like the homes we all live in, words of praise matter. Praise shapes this space. It impacts our place. Praise and gratitude and thanks and the good words. We reach past the ugly words, the words that tear each other down, the words that keep us down, and we reach for the good stuff. Our praise matters. Remember, it's with God's words He calls the world into existence. Maybe this is one way we have gotten off track inside the church, that we have forgotten that finding and naming God's goodness that is powerful and God's power that is all goodness, finding it and naming it and giving it voice, calling attention to it, that this is the role of the church. There's an interesting little vignette in Exodus chapter 16. After Israel, this nation of Israel, these slaves who've been let out of Egypt, right? They've been rescued by the hand of the divine. They're now on the grumbly road out in the desert, and they whine to each other. They whine to Moses. They are whining to God. Should have left us in Egypt. At least in Egypt, we had 3 square meals a day. There's a moment there where God hears their cry, Exodus chapter 16. God responds through Moses. Let me read you this. "I've listened to the complaints, so tell them, at dusk you will all eat meat, and at dawn you will eat your fill of bread, and you will realize that I am God, I'm your God." That evening, quail, these birds, fell. They fell and covered the ground, and in the morning there's a layer of dew all over the camp, and when that layer of dew had lifted, there was this fine, flaky something. This is Eugene Peterson, who says, "Fine as frost on the ground." And the families took one look at this stuff and said to each other, "What is that?" Manna, which means, "What is that? Huh, what is that? Manna, what is that?" But it's only been 24 hours since God said, "I promise you will eat, you'll have bread and meat." And they look at the ground and go, "What is that?" Maybe we share the same challenge, that it's difficult to see and name and remember these blessings that are coming at us from God. My eyes don't always see, my ears don't always hear, my mouth, I don't do this well. I can tell you, I didn't do it well as a parent. I don't do it very well as your pastor. We don't spend that much time in our corporate time together naming the praises towards God. All praise, straight up praise, God's goodness that is powerful, the power of God that is totally good. This is why many Jewish prayers begin with this line, "Blessed, blessed are you, O Lord our God, King, King of the universe." You know, the monastic communities, these little communities of prayer that were planted after Jesus, let's say, you know, 1st, 2nd, 3rd, 4th, 5th, 6th, 7th century. Monastic communities, people who gathered together for the purpose of praying and focusing, they were put and scattered out in such a way, much like our California missions, our missions from San Diego up to San Francisco. You all know, all of you who came through grade 4, right? Isn't that the California mission grade? You have to make a, yeah, you remember, Dad, from all those years ago. Oh, you're a teacher. You didn't make your kids California mission, did you? You know the California missions. We know they're spread out, right? A day's journey. So we could walk from one to the next, as far as our feet can carry us, we'll be at the next mission. It is the same with these monastic communities. They're spread out because in these communities they pray on the hours so that when one community's morning prayers are ending, the next community, the afternoon, the mid-morning prayers will be going, and the next community, the noon prayers will soon come, and there will be no hour in the day, they tell us, that the good name of God who created all of this shall not be praised. They structured their communities in such a way that total praise was always possible. I'm listening to this, and I'm wondering if this is part of our challenge in Christian community. Praying, praising. Psalm 145. It's thought that in particular it was recited when we gather like this in worship, that it was recited in a unique way. Maybe like this, the leader would read a verse, and then those listening would respond, and they would always respond with the same refrain. Every time they would say, "Blessed is the Lord, and blessed is his name forever. Blessed is the Lord, blessed is his name forever." And the leader would read another verse, and the congregation would say, "Blessed is the Lord, and blessed is his name forever." Look, this is 21 verses. If you got to say that in between every verse, this is going to be a while, right? You want lunch? Right. Let's just do a few verses. Get the rhythm of this, friends. I'm the reader, you're the responders, okay? "I will exalt you, my God, the King. I will praise your name forever and ever."
Blessed is the Lord, and blessed is his name forever.
"Every day I will praise you and extol your name forever and ever." "Great is the Lord and most worthy of praise. His greatness no one can fathom."
"Blessed is the Lord, blessed is his name."
"One generation commends your works to another. They tell of your mighty acts."
"Blessed is the Lord, blessed is his name."
Okay, you're kind of falling off like you don't mean it. I'm hearing you, but I'm not buying it. Like, this isn't total straight-up praise, okay? We're going to give you another shot. "They speak of the glorious splendor of your majesty, and I will meditate on your wonderful works."
"Blessed is the Lord, blessed is his name forever."
"They tell of the power of your awesome works, and I will proclaim your great deeds." "They celebrate your abundant goodness and joyfully sing of your righteousness." "The Lord is gracious and compassionate, slow to anger, and rich in love." How many verses do you think we've done? I mean, close. 7, 8. Yeah. We got a lot more to do. I just want to ask this question. If this is how the gathering is shaped, if our worship time together is shaped in such a way that we fill this much airspace with praises to God, isn't that incredible? Like, there is no time to talk about rumor and rancor and gossip and how we pull each other. There's not time for anything else. The whole hour will be filled with this. And it's been on my mind this week as I've challenged my, what in the world do I want to say about Psalm 145 to our church family in 2016? It occurred to me, this is the community of Jesus, friends. Maybe Jesus' parents, Jesus' grandparents, the patriarchs and matriarchs in Jesus' tribe, maybe this is how they shaped their homes and their worship. I could imagine maybe the boy Jesus, his day gets into this rhythm where he says again and again, blessed is the Lord, blessed is his name forever. You want to know how Jesus can walk around the world and be compassionate and merciful and forgiving and long-suffering and present while he's dirty and tired? Because he shaped his days with praise. Straight up praise. We're talking about this for the next 3 weeks now because your pastors believe it matters. The way we use our time together, how we fill the air together, we are making this place together. It's a great word, place makers. It's a great verb, place making. You can take classes in place making now. How to make a place that people want to connect to and be rooted in. It's a group of specialists who think about things like this. What is the place we are making in 2016 here on the corner between these two campuses? What are the stories we'll tell? In 2 weeks, students will pour into our university campus. Some of them will be Adventist Christians. Some of them won't. Some of them will be all sorts of things in between. And I would love to know that the stories we're telling and the words we're using will be the praise of God for these students, that when they walk into this space, we've made a place that resembles God and looks like Jesus. Straight up praise. Remember this morning that we're all in different places, and I want to acknowledge that. There are some of us here this morning that believed, yeah, maybe God put this whole earth together, but God is now a little bit removed, mercifully, but not meddling. There are some of us here this morning who are absolutely convinced that God is involved in landing every plane safely and removing every tumor from our body and getting all of us a job and a girlfriend and a life. There are others of us here this morning who've been told it's the hand of the divine that gives every good gift, but we just don't believe it because we don't see it. It's okay, friends, to be here with all these differences because somehow in community, blessing the name of God, these things come more clear. Blessed is the name of the Lord, and blessed is his name forever. It turns out that maybe it's a good thing to tell a story that has no problems. I sat on the lawn this week, and I had a picnic lunch, and I listened to a guy serenade a girl, and I heard a great debate of inquiry and intellect, and I smelled good food and lawn clippings that I didn't have to mow. It turns out that telling good stories is a great way to use our voice. It's Kurt Vonnegut, the humanist, who puts it this way when he tells a story very similar to mine. Small book he writes, a collection of essays he's written for graduation speeches, but there's one story that makes it into almost every graduation speech. It's the title of the book. He reflects on a time when he was a young boy and they're all gathered at his uncle's house. Sitting out on the front porch, the old people are drinking lemonade and the young people are playing softball in the front yard and somebody's got a banjo and somebody's knitting and somebody's working on peeling potatoes and they can hear the birds, you know, crowing and flying and the wind is just gumming over the plain and everything is perfect. Vonnegut says this is when his uncle looks around and takes it all in and says, well, if this isn't nice, what is? Every good and perfect gift comes from the hand of the divine. Blessed is the name of the Lord. May our praises, friends, shape this place to resemble our Maker and our teacher, Jesus.